live edition of the Lowdown, we are going to be going through a list of targets. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and put this list in the comments so that you guys will know who it is that we are going to be talking about here today. So that is there. Whoop, that did not show up as I was hoping it would, but you guys get the point. Again, thank you everybody for tuning in. The Lakers are preparing for, and the league at large is preparing for free agency, which kicks off here in about a few hours or so. By the time as you guys are listening right now live, or whenever it is that you guys listen to this, I'm going to take this audio and put it up on the pod feed as well, which you can subscribe to the Lakers Lounge everywhere that you find your podcasts. All right, let's go ahead and jump right in. Look at this. This is always so wild to me that people from around the world tune into my dumbass talking about sports. But Antonio Pedro Perucho, I'm from Lisbon, Portugal. I like it. All right, so the first name that is, I'm going to start from the top with why it is that we're talking about free agents at all, right? The Lakers had a path where if they brought back Malik Beasley, if they brought back Mo Bamba, they would have them as trade chips, and they would be able to kind of, they'd have options on the trade market, but would not be players really in the free agent market. They would therefore be, you know, I guess it'd be kind of, they would kind of figure into the free agent market, but all they would have had is their taxpayer mid-level exception and then a bunch of minimums to be able to offer, which, like, the minimum contract market is always an interesting one. The Lakers have done fairly well with minimum contracts over the years, right? We've seen Malik Monk get a minimum contract that he outperformed to the extent of signing with Sacramento for $10 million. It's interesting to see what that might potentially look like this time around. I do have some names here that I do think are worth paying attention to in that veteran minimum contract range. Let's go ahead and... The Beasley and Bamba thing, I wasn't really thrilled with the direction that the Lakers could potentially go in there. I thought that if they were going to bring those guys back, they would keep their total salary number at a height that was below the second apron. I never thought that they were going to go over the second apron, but they would, you know, get right up close to it and give themselves a little bit more margin for error here. Now, they opted not to do that, which means that now you, like, in order to make this worth it, you have to get a Bruce Brown. You have to get a Brook Lopez. You have to get a Dante DiVincenzo. And so far, I don't think the Lakers are really in the driver's seat for any of those three guys. And, you know, then you have to start to get a little bit more creative where you're splitting up the non-taxpayer mid-level, which, you know, you can do. It's $12.4 million. You can split that up and give two players $6.2 million and walk away with multiple players that are better than veteran minimum type players. But even there, there's a bit of a gap that you're kind of running into with, you know, tiers of players that you have access to at various levels of spending power. And yeah, the Bruce Browns, the Dante DiVincenzos, the Brook Lopez's of the world, those guys would step in and immediately impact the Lakers' chances of winning a championship. How much? Purely debatable. Completely debatable. But they would. Eric Gordon, Yuta Watanabe, like those guys, Seth Curry, those guys would help, certainly, but I don't think they, like, you know, really impact the Lakers' chances of winning a championship. So let's start with Bruce Brown. Like that, huh? Swish. All right, so Bruce Brown, the reason the Lakers moved Malik Beasley and Mo Bamba, I'm told, is because they thought they had a very good chance at bringing in Bruce Brown. There is still some confidence there, but from where I'm standing, it's waned a little bit because of everything Indiana is doing and the potential offer sheet that they're potentially putting together for Bruce Brown. Jake Fisher just reported for Yahoo Sports that that offer sheet could be upwards of $20 million. That has been making its way through league conversations now for the last, I would say, 12 to 16 hours or so. That started gaining some steam. And if Bruce Brown gets that kind of a payday and the Lakers are offering just a little more than half of that, it's not looking good. I don't think they wind up walking away with Bruce Brown in that scenario, which means, all right, well, what are the chances that other guys? We'll talk about that later. But what it does mean, and you know, this is where I was nervous going into this approach, was that means you just let Malik Beasley and Mo Bamba walk and got rid of two very important trade pieces. We know that teams throughout the league are trying to cut salary for next year. Maybe, you know, for this season, certainly, but definitely for next year, when the penalties for being above the second apron really jump, teams are really, you know, moving money to be able to avoid that. And that's where $26 million of expiring contracts really would have helped. You probably could have gotten something for that, and the amount of second-round picks that the Lakers have, the number of players on rookie contracts that the Lakers have, and the biggest trade chip of all that they have, the 2029 first-round pick that would convey after LeBron, after AD, and you know, at a time where the Lakers would, you know, could have a lot of questions facing them. So that's something that, like, if the Lakers move that, they're getting an all-star, period. That is what I, you know, they are not considering moving that for anything other than a player who definitely changes the outlook of title chances here. But because they no longer have Malik Beasley and Mo Bamba on their books, if you are moving that pick and if you are bringing in that player, you're also likely moving a rotation player's salary to do so, right? Now, look, they could bring back Malik Beasley at a number that and at an expiring number, and he could technically be obviously included in a trade at that point. But you know, if not, then you're looking at moving probably D'Angelo Russell, who is either the starting point guard or the sixth man heading into next year, and you know, that was always a difficulty back when they were trying to move Talen Horton Tucker or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or whatever, was that, like, they didn't have extra salary to be able to just add to their team. They would be removing a part of the rotation to hopefully, you know, improve collectively, but you would be taking a potential step back for a potential leap forward. And in this case, now that they don't have those contracts, that is off of the table. That is something that, you know, they can't just, whoopsies, Mo, come back. If they do bring Mo Bamba back, it would be at a number, you know, maybe the biannual exception. I've heard some interest there. Maybe at the veterans minimum. I think his market will be a little bit higher than that. But they don't have bird rights on him. So if they don't have as much freedom to bring him back as, say, Malik Beasley, who they did retain bird rights with and can sign over the cap for and all of that good stuff. So, that's the situation there with Bruce Brown. See, this is where lowdowns usually sound a lot cleaner because it's not live and I can cough off to the side, but I'm holding all of them in. All right, so let's go. Let's last little thing here on Bruce Brown. If the Lakers do bring him in, that, I think, is the biggest step forward that they could take this offseason, now given the plan that they're on, right? He makes the Nuggets worse. He makes the Lakers better. He becomes their starting shooting guard. He becomes their closing shooting guard and fits absolutely perfectly with Austin Reeves, who I'm told and have been told all along, he is definitely back. There is, and one thing I've been wondering over the course of the offseason is if he would bet on himself in any way. I think Jake Fisher just reported he could be taking a 3+1 deal where he hits free agency a year early, but does solidify some structure and some guaranteed money in the meantime. Regardless, it's probably going to be a 4-year deal with potentially an option for like 55, 56 million. He's the starting guard, whether it's shooting guard or point guard, is it remains to be seen. And Brown fits perfectly with him. So if they are able to walk away with Brown, that would I'd be over the moon. I wouldn't be able I would have some issues with you know, the risk involved here, but if the risk pays off, then cool. It was worth the gamble. If not, you know, less cool. Next guys on the list here are Dante DiVincenzo and Brook Lopez. This is going to be a shorter one because there just isn't very much interest there. At least from Dante DiVincenzo, all reports right now are pointing towards him going to New York to reunite with fellow Villanova guards Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson, and they would have the shortest, toughest guard rotation in the league if that does play out that way. And then Brook Lopez, I think the Lakers are priced out for. He's, I think Jake Fisher just reported that he is going to get an offer in the range of like 20 mil a year, which sounds about right for a defensive player of the year runner up. He's probably going to get that from Houston. If he doesn't, you know, maybe the Lakers factor into this a little bit more. I have been dubious of his interest in coming back to the Lakers. I know that did not go very smoothly, whether that was the role that he had before while he was a Laker, or the exit afterward, right, where he wound up signing a $3 and change million deal to lead the Lakers that the Lakers could have easily given him. So some weird stuff kind of going on at the end of his tenure there with the Lakers. But look, eventually maybe you move on. Luke Walton is no longer the coach. Maybe the Lakers find video of Magic Johnson berating Luke Walton and play that in like the free agency meeting. But that notwithstanding, I do think they're probably priced out on Brook Lopez, which again really makes it that much more important that Bruce Brown happens. I do think, like I said, because of the impact it would make on Denver, Bruce Brown should be the top target. But I also understand people who really want Brook Lopez more because they can pair Lopez with Davis and really buy into being bigger, stronger, faster. And I like the matchup. Not much, you know, I'd still be a little nervous about it because Jokic is such an insanely great player right now. But Lopez is harder to move, stretches the floor, and really gives the Lakers some offensive punch also by spreading the floor that they didn't have from any of their backup centers last year, or centers period, right? Because AD doesn't really space the floor either. Oh, I hope I wasn't muted the whole time. Anyway, the next one here is Eric Gordon, where this one is tricky. The market right now is indicating that he might get upwards of the full non-taxpayer mid-level exception. He was slated to make $21 million this year. The Clippers did not pick up that option, made him a free agent. And I thought that any talk of him being available at the minimum was a little premature because he has a lot of money to recoup there. That said, him at the full non-taxpayer mid-level makes me nauseous. That is not a good use of that amount of money. He is really slowed down. He's, I think, 34 years old. He is not the defender that he once was. He can still shoot it. He always will be able to shoot it. But if that shot isn't there, and if he continues to slide defensively, that would be a pretty big miss at that number. And given how few options the Lakers have to add to their roster, that is not something that they can miss on, right? They can't miss on this non-taxpayer mid-level exception. And I think Eric Gordon comes with the highest likelihood of missing if you use it for that. The other scenario that Dave McMenamin threw out there was splitting it between him and Dennis Schroeder, which, again, you just hard capped yourself to bring back Dennis Schroeder and to add Eric Gordon. No thanks. I will also say, though, like, the player, there is some upside. You know, he's not terrible. Like I said, I didn't think he was a veteran minimum player, but I also don't think he's anywhere close to the $12.4 million that some teams are apparently ready to give him. Speaking of Schroeder, the Lakers have indicated all offseason that they want him back in some way, shape, or form, whether it's giving him the minimum raise that he can get, whether it's the biannual exception, whether it's some of the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, or back when they were heading towards needing to use it, the mini mid-level was something that they had potentially slated for him. But in some way, shape, or form, I'm pretty confident that the Lakers are really going to try to bring him back. Now, Jake Fisher did say that there could be some interest from Chicago in Dennis Schroeder, with former coach Billy Donovan out there. But I do think that the Lakers are probably in the driver's seat to retain his services. It's just a matter of what they use to bring him in. Ideally, you basically make like a wink-wink deal with him. And you give him the raise that you can, give him the minimum, the veteran's minimum this year, and give him that slight raise, and then you basically promise him, you know, handshake deal. At the end of this, we will take care of you next year and give you about $12 million next year. Outside of that, though, you know, if you're talking about using an exception, if you don't get Bruce Brown, I think you really have to utilize those exceptions on needs. And I just don't think they have a real need, a desperate need at backup guard. Not in ways that can't be filled by other guys who I'm going to talk about here in a bit on the veteran minimum market. So, yeah, the other thing too, and it's something I'm always going to be dubious about with Dennis Schroeder, is I just don't trust Darvin Ham not to give him an outside role, outsized role. I don't want to watch the Lakers play three tiny little guards again next year. That is not something I have any real interest in doing. And if you have Schroeder there, there's a really good chance that Darvin finagles the minutes up there by playing smaller to get Dennis Schroeder minutes, and that is not an outcome that I would like to see here. Though I guess if you are using one of your exceptions, then you have to make it worth it, you know, worthwhile doing so. So, you know, if that's something that you're worried about, I definitely think Darvin Ham would get his money's worth. It would be kind of like Stephen A. at ESPN, where he got that, you know, a crazy raise recently, and then was on like every single show, which meant that he was making like, you know, not nearly as much per hour as was initially indicated. By the way, to everybody at ESPN who is getting laid off, I'm sorry, man, this sucks. This whole market, this industry is just brutal. So prayers out to all of those people. All right, the next name on here, another potential future former Laker, is, this is funny, I didn't even know Eric Gordon was in the league till a few months ago. Yeah, he's really kind of fallen off. But anyway, the next name on here is Lonnie Walker. And this is an interesting one because, as Aaron explained in yesterday's lounge, and the plan at some point today is for he and me to go live on here again. So make sure you're subscribed to be notified as soon as we do go live that we are doing so. But Lonnie Walker last year signed a mini mid-level exception that at that point was actually higher than this current mini mid-level. It dropped from, I think he made seven and change or something like that, six and change or seven and change last year. He would actually get paid better if the Lakers bring him back at the minimum raise that they could give him, going from seven-ish to $7.8 million that they could offer him this year. And that gives the Lakers some options here. And that's why, you know, if I had to choose between Schroeder and Lonnie, I think I'd rather have Lonnie because of his, he's a little younger, bigger, more athletic, and he can shoot. And I trust Darvin Ham to utilize in the proper role. I understand I'm probably in the minority. I was talking with Pete last night. We were texting until like 2 a.m. About all of this stuff. And he is very much team Schroeder. I get it. He played really well for the Lakers last year. He was their fifth best player in that series. And the player, the only player that they really trusted to run back in their, you know, most important groups. That said, I just think there's more upside with Lonnie. And I trust him to fit into the concept of what the Lakers need a little bit better than Schroeder. But if they do bring back Lonnie, they would have to be really creative with what they do with D'Angelo Russell, who I'm told is going to be back. Jake Fisher is saying, and it echoing the numbers that I've been talking about this whole time, right? A 2-year, $40 million deal with the second year being either a team option or not guaranteed. If that's the case, then you really got to be super careful with what you give Rui Hachimura, because if those numbers get too high, you cannot bring Lonnie Walker back at the $7.8 million that you would hopefully be able to give him. So then you're hoping that he takes the biannual, and normally players don't take pay cuts, especially young players, they don't take pay cuts to go back to a team where, by the way, he probably wouldn't even start. So the Lakers have kind of an advantage here, but I don't know if they're going to be able to utilize that advantage with what they can offer him, because they're going to be hard capped if they use the non-taxpayer or the biannual. I guess I could talk about that in a little bit, you know, ways that they can avoid being hard capped and give themselves a little bit more flexibility depending on how the free agent market goes. But, you know, we'll get to that if we get to that. That said, if that is it for Lonnie, I really enjoyed watching him play. Friend of the show, Lonnie Walker. If you haven't checked that out, it is here on the YouTube page. Fairly high up, I believe, that you can find Lonnie Walker in my conversation, in which he and I agree that wrapping gifts sucks. All right, the next name on here is, as I said on Twitter, where you can follow me, you know, right there, at Anthony Irwin LA on Twitter. I'm going to be careful here, but Cam Reddish to the Lakers is a really poorly kept secret in the league. Now, this is where it's kind of difficult to nail down, because it's a poorly kept secret in part because of, like, observational evidence, right? There's the clutch aspect of it. Rob Pelinka loves buying low on guys and trying to build them back up. The Lakers have had success buying low on guys and building them back up. So, you know, clutch might want him with the Lakers. Clutch might, with LeBron specifically, to kind of learn to be a pro and get his, you know, career, which I think he was like the number 10 or 7 pick overall, and he's just kind of toiled in mediocrity his entire career. There's some, like, motor questions there. There's some work ethic questions there, which is why he's available for potentially the veteran minimum. But Reddish to the Lakers on the veteran's minimum is something that most people around the league that I've spoken to have said, yeah, that makes sense. That's probably happening. So I do like the fit. He's a wing. He played a lot better in Portland at the tail end of last year. Now, I don't know if that was contextual, because Portland was such a sad situation that, like, anybody who looked decent looked, you know, extra good there. But I do think he is worth investing in. He's at that stage of his career where guys either get it or they don't. And Phil Handy and the Lakers player development department have had a lot of success with a lot of guys. And if Cam does wind up being a Laker, I have quite a bit of confidence in you know, if he's going to make it work anywhere, I think the Lakers is about the best situation he could land on. So that is something that I think is probably happening, and something that I would welcome. That's a really good, you know, low risk, high reward type play that could really pay dividends if you find, you know, a legit wing at that number. Now, if you find a legit wing at that number, he's probably not going to be at that number next year, but that's something that you hope to have happen, right? I was really hoping in the CBA that players that got picked up on veteran minimum contracts would immediately get like either early or actual bird rights, but that didn't come to fruition because the players union was more focused on gambling and other non-basketball things. Anyway, I see here in the chat that y'all are interested in Yuta. I am also interested in Yuta Watanabe. You know, he played with the Brooklyn Nets last year. I believe he was drafted originally by Toronto. He really improved as a shooter in Brooklyn. He's wing sized, brings a lot to the table, like a really gritty player, really willing to mix it up and compete defensively. I have heard that if he is available, it would be closer to the biannual or one of the exceptions, or, you know, basically that like some team would sign him with their cap space and go barely above the veterans minimum. And that like at that point, the Lakers would be kind of priced out because I don't know if he's so valuable to me that I would bring him in at the biannual. But if he is available at the minimum, which, you know, some people out there are kind of linking him to the Lakers potentially at the minimum, that would be a great signing. I would really like it. I think with what the Lakers are looking at next year, like, you know, they really like their hard-nosed point guards, right? And I'm going to talk about a couple here in a bit. But if you're looking at hard-nosed point guards who don't really shoot very well, then it makes it that much more important that you have shooting on the wing, and Yuta is one of the better shooters on the market, and especially at the minimum. So, yeah, I don't know that I would put the Lakers in the driver's seat for him, but the Lakers are linked to him to this point. I know the Lakers really like him. This come back to Yuta. Keep an eye on Yuta is how I would kind of phrase it. I think there's a real shot here that they're able to get him. If some other team doesn't give them give him a cap space deal that the Lakers can't afford. Next one here is an interesting one. I heard this one last night, basically as I was going to bed. And it made me think for a second. I believe I had this on my bingo card. I don't know. But Kevin Love obviously went to school at UCLA, won a championship with the Cavs, then, kind of toiled in kind of a suboptimal situation there as Cleveland went full rebuild, and he was kind of in that weird spot where he's still a useful player, but he doesn't really fit their timeline, lost his role to a certain extent, and gets bought out, and then plays really well for Miami on their path to getting to the championship series in ways that nobody saw coming. So, and he was a big part of like an adjustment that they made. I forget which series it was that he really stepped forward, but I like it. He could play with AD. If you don't care about defense, he could maybe be your center in some lineups, but he would help with rebounding, something that the Lakers could really use some help with. Obviously limited defensively, doesn't really move his feet very well. Is a smart player, really good passer. The Lakers haven't had like a passer out of the high post very much, since Mark Gasol, and that is a part of the offense that I really kind of miss. So he could add that. He does have quite a bit of interest at the minimum. I was told that Phoenix and the Lakers are kind of his preferred destinations, but we'll kind of see what that actually looks like. If some team does give him an exception, he's made plenty of money in his career, so maybe he doesn't value it as much, but it's also potentially like one of the last chances that he'll have at not being paid at a veteran minimum contract. So if somebody does give him that kind of contract, you know, that isn't one of those vetmans, then I could see him kind of prioritizing that as well. But as of right now, his market looks like in the vetman range, and you could do way worse than Kevin Love at whatever it would be, $3 million or something like that. All right, last couple names here. Javon Carter and Shake Milton are interesting on a variety of levels because, again, I don't know that I'm really on board with using the biannual or any of the non-taxpayer money on Dennis Schroeder. But, I just don't think it's worthwhile to use such an important resource on a player who can't shoot. Now, if it's Javon Carter, if it's Shake Milton, and those guys have their own questions shooting, but they're at a veteran minimum contract, perfect. Absolutely perfect. So that is these two guys, there is interest there. Jake Fisher reported interest from the Lakers in both of those guys of again, Yahoo Sports, friend of the show, Jake Fisher, that is. That was another name that came up last night in some of my conversations was like, yeah, if they don't get Schroeder, if they decide not to use the exception on Schroeder, look for them to go and try and get one of those guys. I know they really, really like Javon Carter. I also do as well. Professional, really gritty defender. The Lakers are going to need some help at the point of attack and he would really solve that problem. Again, not the best shooter, on volume, I don't believe. But if it's a similar-ish player to Schroeder and you keep your exception money dry, then I think that's the path I would rather go down. Because, again, I don't think Darvin Ham is going to overplay Javon Carter or Shake Milton. Whew. All right. I guess I'll just spend the last few minutes here explaining one path that the Lakers could take, and this is off the top of the head, that wouldn't hard cap them. So let's say they bring in Austin at the $12.4 million he's going to make as part of that four-year, $56 million deal that will take whatever shape it does, whether it's a straight four-year deal or a 3+1 type of option. Let's say they bring back Rui Hachimura at like $18 million. Let's say they bring back D'Angelo Russell at like $20 million. They bring back Lonnie Walker at the 7.8 that I talked about. They re-sign Malik Beasley using bird rights and then give Dennis Schroeder the minimum salary. They use their non-taxpayer exception. Or no, their taxpayer mid-level exception on Mo Bamba. And they dip back in that they jump back up above the first apron and don't hard cap themselves. That is a path that I haven't heard much about. It's my preferred path again because I am very much interested in getting that number of their total salary number up as high as it can get to give themselves. Sorry. To give themselves the best chance at, if you bring back, let's say you bring back Beasley at like $8 million, right? You cut his salary basically in half from last year. Or in this case, if the point is to get your total salary number up as high as possible, maybe you say you go $10 or $12 million on Malik Beasley and really jump up above that first apron. Then you can combine Malik Beasley's 12-ish mil, we'll say we'll really inflate it with the $5 million that you would be giving to Mo Bamba. And that is $17 million outgoing. Plus you add D'Angelo Russell's potential 20, and you could bring in a $30-ish million player again, those type of players tend to really impact things. The reason I mention all of this is Kyle Kuzma's market has really dried out and, we were thinking maybe Utah for him. We were thinking maybe, Houston or Sacramento, but those teams seem to have other plans. So the likeliest scenario here probably seems to be for Kuzma to go back to Washington with as much money that they're prepared to give him. And they would probably give him quite a bit of money because they have to get to the floor anyway. So I do kind of wonder if he signs kind of a shorter term deal with Washington that becomes tradable, that the Lakers would be able to revisit at the deadline. And again, the only way that you can do this is A, you don't perform any sign and trades that bring in the player, right? That would hard cap you. You don't use any more money than the taxpayer mid-level exception. So if you keep that exception down below five and you don't touch the biannual exception, you would remain not hard capped. And at that point, you could re-sign all your guys to slightly above value numbers that raises your total revenue up. You sign them all to, you know, shorter term deals. And that's kind of the give and take that you're giving there that would allow you to, you know, keep guys on shorter movable deals, but also pay them for taking those shorter movable deals. And you go into next year with mostly the same group. You actually implement the continuity that Rob Pelinka has talked about. And again, you offer yourself a little bit more margin for error here, financially speaking. So if the Lakers don't get Bruce Brown, this is actually the path I would prefer to go forward. I know that's a lot of math and it's a lot of, like, there's no chart that I can like point to or whatever. My apologies there. But that is the path I would prefer personally. That is not, I have not heard that that is something that they have really focused on to this point. They've been really focused on Bruce Brown right now, but if they don't, and if they have to pivot, they can't. Whew. Everybody good? that is going to do it here for this live edition of The Lowdown. If you missed any of it, and again, you can see in the comments all of the people that I talked about. So if you missed any of it, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcasts to the Lakers Lounge podcast, and you will find it all there. You'll also obviously be able to go back and watch this video for any of that if you really, really want to see my puffy, sleep-deprived face. but yeah, until the next time you guys hear from me, which is probably going to be in a few hours, to be completely honest, because this stuff is always really fast-moving. Once this stuff gets going, I will probably do some kind of a live show to react to it live as it's all happening. At some point, I'm supposed to take my family out for pizza, so maybe you guys will see me take... I'll record from the pizza place. How about that? From Pine House Pizza out here in Austin. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin, saying have a good one, everybody.